Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Men in Blazers ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Whether it's a midweek game on the continent or a big weekend clash, cash in with your soccer knowledge on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. Download the app today. Use code MIB for a first deposit match of up to $100. This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 long seasons of exile in the National League. Dedicated staff and passionate supporters celebrate the city's return to glory, the big time, all while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in that higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One's promised land? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu. You're listening to the Men in Blazers Media Network. Suboptimal radio.
In years to come, they're not going to care whether you played very well. You won it. So, I'm going to think about all the cups of tea I'm going to ask people to make me at work this week. Because I have just been voted the best coach in the world. Oh my goodness, oh my goodness, I've just won an Oscar.
It's Rog, and this is The Women's Game, presented by Paramount Plus, the second episode of a new podcast dedicated to the rise of women's football at home in the United States and around the globe. Taking you inside the game every week with the incredible human beings who make it all happen. And this weekend was one filled with glory. Chelsea women's glory in the English Women's Super League, which next season will be on Paramount Plus. Emma Hayes, what a coach. Her team clinched their third triumph on the spin in possibly the most dramatic fashion. Last day of the season. Title still up for grabs between Chelsea and Arsenal. And Chelsea actually fell behind twice to Manchester United before the great Sam Kerr just stepped in and took matters into her own hands. She tied the game with a fine finish and then killed it off by unleashing a moment of instinctual creative poetry. If you haven't seen the goal, go and find it now. And if you have, like me, I'm sure it's still imprinted on the inside of your eyelids. It is a stunning piece of human mastery, an incredible footballer, and filling a moment of lethal brilliance when a team needed it most. Emma Hayes called this her proudest title, adding in her inimitable style, "I'm absolutely mentally drained right now. I'll just go home and have a cup of tea." Emma and her team go for the FA Cup double next weekend against Manchester City. And this pod is a special one, an interview with Emma Hayes, who is to me one of the smartest managers in the game today. And by game, I mean, both on the men's or women's side, there are few more trophied managers, few who are smarter leaders, better tacticians. Listen to this podcast. It's actually hard not to be awed by her story and her leadership philosophy. That interview in a minute. But I do want to note quickly what a complicated weekend it was here in the United States, where Saturday's Challenge Cup final showcased much that's great about the women's game here and much that needs to change. As a sporting competition, North Carolina Courage overcame Washington Spirit 2-1 in a match which began as a high-energy contest but quickly devolved into a bruising war of attrition in the second half. There were so many injuries that can only be described as horrifying to watch. And the image that will stick with fans from this game is undoubtedly that of the Spirit players sprinting halfway across the field to grab a stretcher for their teammate Jordan Baggett after a dreadful collision with Dibinha in the final moments of the game. A number of the players spoke out in the aftermath of the game about the changes needed to professionalise the cup if it is to continue, including Trinity Rodman, who simply tweeted, "Absolutely unacceptable." Glory for the Courage. An end to a 20-game unbeaten run for the Washington Spirit. It's going to be fascinating to see how they rebound next Sunday when they take on Angel City at home, 5 p.m. Eastern Time on Paramount+. The Courage, meanwhile, will travel to Gotham Red Bull Arena for the home opener, Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, also on Paramount Plus. Go to paramountplus.com/MIBTWG and try 1 week free. I thought this weekend a lot about what Becky and Midge talked about, the disconnect between the Challenge Cup and the regular season. We've seen the results of that tournament seem set to do very little to inform how the regular season will play out going forward. We've already seen that handful of surprising results this past weekend. Biggest amongst them, San Diego's 4-0 destruction of Gotham FC. Alex Morgan regally becoming only the third player to score 4 goals in a single game in the history of the league. Elsewhere, Orlando Pride snuck one past Angel City for a third-minute Sydney Leroux finish, silencing a stadium full of pink and black-clad LA fans. Orlando's first win since September, and Godspeed Sydney Leroux, a player I really enjoy watching. Oh, honouring Mother's Day in the only way she knows how. We'll set up the weekend ahead in a moment, but first, here's my interview with Chelsea manager Emma Hayes. My guest today is one of the most successful managers in world football, a pioneer who's climbed the coaching ladder rung by rung, paid her dues and then some, and has, over the past decade, transformed Chelsea women from also-ran to back-to-back powerhouse winners of the Women's Super League. It's an inspirational pathfinding journey which transcends sports. It's an incredible joy to welcome manager of Chelsea FC Women and newly minted FIFA Best Women's Coach of the Year, Emma Hayes.
Hello, America. Wow, what a welcome that was.
I want to go right back to the beginning, Emma. You grew up in Camden, North London, in the 1980s, on the Curnock Street Council estate. Your idols when you were young were Maradona and the iconic Paul Gascoigne. What did you dream of as a kid was possible as a young London girl in football back then?
Playing football in cages, playing in games where there were no pinnies. It was 20 a side. You didn't really know who was on what team. I think I've always been my fondest memories. I used to grow up dreaming of playing in the FA Cup final. That's what a kid in the 80s really wanted to do. And I wanted to lead my team out at Wembley. And I used to line all the kids up beside the pitch, including my sisters. And we used to like enter the pitch one by one, waving to the fake Wembley crowd and talking about playing at Wembley and winning in front of 90,000 people. And every time, the winning team celebrated and lifted the cup. So for me, being involved with the biggest tournaments on the biggest stage, I've dreamt about it since I was a kid.
We've all done it. Not everybody has made those dreams come true. And I do think it's important here for an American audience to describe briefly the state of women's football in England in the 1980s, because the rise of the women's game in Great Britain is one of the greatest stories of my lifetime. But back when we were both kids, football was very male, misogynistic, and the women who played the game often did so on the fringes. Can you describe what it was like back then for comparison?
There weren't even girls' teams. Forget pro teams or even amateur teams. When I was a kid coming through, my father, along with Vic Akers, formed Arsenal Youth. So I remember being a 9, 10-year-old and all the local community teams that were playing after school joined up to form Arsenal at the time because there just weren't any opportunities to play for girls and women. And that was probably the beginning time of the growth of the game from a participation perspective. There was zero opportunities. There were zero role models. My role models, they were all male. Didn't know what a female football player looked like until 1999. That and that generation, they were the first role models for me.
The 1999 Women's World Cup held right here in America. What was it like when you saw that for the very first time?
My father went to Atlanta and he went to the games. He was over there and I never forget he called me, not from a mobile phone because I think they were only 2 years old, but he called me from his hotel and he said, Emma, you will not believe it. There are thousands of people going to a football match and they idolise these players. And I was like, really, Dad? He said, you have to come, you have to see it. And I didn't go. And he brought me back some memorabilia and he rang me every night after all of their games. He went to them and he just said, you have to be in America. This is where you have to be. And that was in 1999.
You were a promising youth player. You played on the Arsenal under 18 till a skiing injury at age 17 cruelly put an end to your playing career, to university. You had dreams of being a spy, but your father told the English media that when it came to lessons about assassination, you, Emma Hayes, were out. And espionage's loss was football's gain, because after a couple of years in an unsatisfying everyday job, you felt that calling to be back in football and you headed to the United States of America. You said you arrived with just £1,000 and a backpack. You took a job in Long Island for $120 a week. Young Emma Hayes arriving in an American sports culture that embraced women's football. What was that like?
I remember getting at the airport, being given a set of keys, a car. I was staying with a host family and I was wished the best of luck. And off I went. Again, no GPS, no mobile phones, good old traditional map. And I remember navigating the Long Island Expressway, the Grand Central Parkway, and thinking, oh my goodness, I barely know how to drive on the right side of the road. I've got to get used to everything here. And I used to travel from Roslyn out to Stony Brook every day to go and coach the youth teams out there. And the culture shock for me was I just couldn't believe how much football was being played everywhere on fields and these little youth clubs with hundreds, thousands of kids. And more importantly, a split, an even split between boys and girls. It was so shocking for me. Actually, I was coaching boys teams as well, which I really loved. I loved to coach boys teams as much as I did girls. And I remember within 12 months, I got an opportunity to work for the Long Island Lady Riders and they'd sacked their coach. And this little 25-year-old was sort of in a position that went, I'll do it. And boy, did I have some learnings. But that was a great, great start on my professional journey.
2001, you only became the youngest head coach in the history of the W League, that long-suffering semi-pro women's league at the Long Island Lady Riders. Now, half the players on the team were older than you at the time, Emma, and there's a legendary story of how the goalkeeper, a 37-year-old ex-US international, who was also the general manager, told you she'd hired you and that you would not be dropping her. You were so bloody green as a manager. Just how steep was that learning curve?
I made so many mistakes and I didn't get lots of it right. But what I did learn was the importance of people and the power of that spirit. And I remember older captain, older vice captain, obviously an older goalkeeper. They really helped me to put the team in the best place possible. But of course, when it comes to tough decisions, I was relatively new to that. I didn't really know how to handle that. And sometimes, I'm sure I handled some of them terribly. But what I learned was that when you're in it, you got a decision to make. You're either going to put the best interest of the whole first, or you play favourites, or you'll play to not do anything to upset or offend anyone. And I realised very early on, I was born to be a head coach.
You only went and won the conference championships and were named National Coach of the Year. The goalkeeper general manager did get a revenge after you eventually dropped her and worked out a way to fire you. So you headed back to England to be an assistant coach to the legendary Vic Akers at Arsenal Ladies. You were there in 2007 when Arsenal completed an unprecedented quadruple. And Arsenal tapped you to take over for Akers when he retired after 22 years and 36 trophies. But I'm fascinated by this, Emma. You rejected the chance because, quote, we'd won everything and I didn't feel challenged. I'm fascinated by this moment. Most coaches love to win. But from what you said at the time, you wanted to build a winner, not just inherit one.
When I came back to the UK, I thought, wow, this is amazing. This is a dream for me. The club I grew up playing at, I now get the chance to go and be an academy director and assistant coach and compete for titles. And more importantly, compete to win the Champions League. To do that within my first year was Still one of my big highs in my career. But what I realised that trouncing teams, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, nil, it just didn't stimulate me. It wasn't enough. At that young age, I felt like I needed to be pushed again, and taking the hard decision to go back to the US for me was the right decision. I felt like I needed a lot to learn again, and I had to choose between St. Louis at the time and Chicago. And I chose Chicago because I'm more of a city girl.
2008, you charge back to the United States, accepting the challenge of managing the Chicago Red Stars, then a new team in the freshly formed WPS. Talk about a new challenge, new league, money starting to come into women's football at the pro level, an abundance of talent. You selected one Megan Rapinoe of the University of Portland as your first draft pick in 2009. But it was not to be, though. The owners were impatient. You were sacked just 6 games into the 2010 season, your first real career failure. And you've talked about how shattering this moment was for you. You said, I cried for a couple of weeks, partied for a couple of weeks, lost my confidence completely. But you've also said that you train yourself to be really self-reflective in loss. What did you learn from this experience?
First of all, I learned everything. I learned building a franchise from scratch is one of the hardest things to do, because it's not as simple as just putting a team together. You're putting offices together, you're finding training pitches, you are trying to navigate your way through a landscape that isn't established yet. I learned that you don't get time. You don't have that time. You don't get the opportunity and the foundation to build something. You have to win now. And that was a really big lesson, having come from Arsenal, an established club, to one that was, you know, you're putting a whole group of 18, 19 players together and you expect it to work. And it didn't work for whatever reason. It was another reminder that this isn't fantasy football. So when you put together a list of names, and everyone used to say to me, oh my God, the Chicago Red Stars is the best team on paper. Correct, they were, on paper. It didn't work as a team for a number of reasons, and it just didn't produce the performances. And I reflected so hard on how to build a team from that. And I took that learning to Western New York when I was given the task as the technical director to build the team in a new franchise with the wonderful Salins, Joe Salin, the king of hot dog in Western New York. He gave me his money to build a team for him from scratch. I took all my learnings of how not to build a team to produce a team that then went on and won the championship for them in its inaugural year.
You kept that relationship with Western New York Flash even when you went back to England and took a hiatus from management, building up your family's foreign exchange business. You're working as a recruitment consultant for the Flash on the side. Were there any doubts during this time? Like, maybe management not for me, maybe I should be doing something easier, something with more job security? Or in your mind, was it always just a matter of biding your time for that next move?
This is about 2010, 2011. I'd had 10 years non-stop. I just needed a break. I just needed to, as I always say, I just needed to get off the train. I needed to experience what it felt like to have a weekend. Like, as we know, us football people, we never have weekends. Like, I had Friday night, all day Saturday, all day Sunday for 2 whole years. Christmases every weekend. But I realised within a year and a half of that, that it wasn't enough. I didn't really want my weekend that much. I missed football, but I didn't know what I wanted to do with it. And even though I'd been building databases and content management systems for the foreign exchange business, I get this little phone call while I'm watching the Olympic final, 5,000 metres, Mo Farah sprint into the finishing line, I had a nice glass of champagne. I get this phone call from the then Chelsea chairman, says, hi Emma, I've been given your name. Are you interested in becoming the Chelsea manager? And I remember thinking, oh my goodness, it's happening, it's happening. That clairvoyance said this was going to happen.
You are hinting at a story from back in 2008 when you were leaving Arsenal, thinking about the move to America. You visited a clairvoyant who gave you what can only be described as eerily prescient but deeply unhelpful advice in that moment, telling you not Arsenal, not America, but you would find success at Chelsea instead. I've always imagined it was John Terry doing double duty, turning tarot cards somewhere in London. But when in 2012 Chelsea did come calling, you've said you never accepted a job so quickly. Your quote is, "I didn't even ask about the money. I just thought, this is my calling."
I think I accepted the job before they put the phone down. I hadn't even visited the facility. I didn't know what its budget was. I knew a little bit about their playing squad. The following morning, I got on a train. I came straight out to Cobham. I got here a little early. I walked across the site and I thought, the potential here is enormous. This is enormous. And all I saw was potential.
Paramount Plus is your choice for championship soccer.
A Messi tour de force!
Streaming the best teams and biggest stars in America and around the world.
Giant stars, huge action.
From UEFA Champions League and Serie A.
Weston McKennie!
NWSL and the CONCACAF World Cup qualifiers.
A milestone moment for the United States!
Plus the best action from South America and Asia.
Oh my, what a goal!
So how do you choose from so many champions? You don't have to. This is the best of CBS Sports. Streaming on Paramount Plus.
You know what feels even better than correctly predicting the outcome of a football game? Winning up to 100 times your cash while doing it. Cash in with your soccer knowledge on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. Quick withdrawals, easy gameplay, an enormous selection of players and stat types. That's what makes Prize Picks America's number one fantasy sports app. We love easy gameplay here at Men in Blazers. Just love it. Easy gameplay. Prize Picks offers weekly promotions and special offers for the biggest moments of the sports season. Look, for Everton fans, it's not been the easiest campaign, although it hasn't been the worst either yet. But one way to make those Sean Dyche-induced draws more exciting, Prize Picks. Love smashing more on Jordan Pickford saves, less on Michael Keane passes completed, and much, much less on Beto goal contributions. Oh, it allows me to feel good about feeling bad. Download the app today and use code MIB for a first deposit match up to $100. That's promo code MIB. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Talk us through those early Chelsea days, because we need to say, it ends well this, but the state of the team when you inherited it was very different than the Chelsea women powerhouse we now know. Had a small budget, tiny staff, all part-time, training I think just twice a week. Team even had to wash their own kit. Take us back to the beginning there.
Well, I'm not even sure they had part-time staff. Nobody was here. We had players that were on part-time contracts, and a group of players that were no better than probably the bottom two teams in the league. And I realised I'd come from a culture of America where I'd been in draft systems, I'd been in the collegiate system, I'd been in the pro system. So for me, I only thought about how to build a team without really understanding that in England, dismantling a team to rebuild just didn't happen. Because women's football was part of the amateur age. So when I came to Chelsea, I think I cut 8 or 9 bodies immediately. And in fact, one of my goalkeepers who's here now, Carly Telford, even now she's like, "Boss, that wasn't normal for then." And I said, I didn't really think about it. I just was so Americanized. And I thought about what we had to do, and I had to free up some funds to try and build the process. I then fast realized that we didn't have the infrastructure off the pitch. And we needed to put the foundation into hiring a general manager and the support staff in and around the team. And there was 4 key people that are still here to this day that have really helped build the team from scratch.
I mean, you're almost underselling what you did. I love this. I just saw potential. I brought in infrastructure, because we should say it was a rocky start. You lost 11 of your first 12 games. And on the men's side, that's often enough grounds for sacking.
Yeah.
You did somehow convince Chelsea to invest not just in you, but in the team itself, the calibre of players, the training facilities, the sports science, the entire infrastructure. How did you do that?
Good relationships, good patience, loads of suffering, because I knew the team wasn't good enough. I always like to build the narrative. I knew that recruiting 1 or 2 players, the world would start looking and go, hang on, I think Chelsea are investing. And then just built layer on layer, year on year, to keep influencing that narrative in the direction we wanted it to go. But the key was off the pitch. You have to get it right off the pitch with everything around it. On it, 15 months of losing non-stop. I remember one of my assistants saying to me, Emma, we're terrible. I said, I know, but stick with the task. It's a process. We have to get that process right off, keep the recruitment going. The vision was clear. And I think all those experiences prior to that had put me in the position where I felt calm about it. And I just knew it was a matter of time.
2014 season, the title agonisingly slipped through your fingers on the final day, pipped by Liverpool. That winter, the club funded a move to full-time training, and the impact has been, well, seismic. Chelsea have become a juggernaut. 2015, 2018, 2020, 2021 champions. And I want to talk about your leadership style, because you've been described as a shapeshifter in terms of your management approach. You can be a parent figure, but you can also deliver tough love. You give some players a lot of tactical information. Others, like our friend Sam Kerr, you've said do better with less. What's the secret of great player management?
Oh, $1 million question. And if we could coin it and bottle it and sell it, I'd be a millionaire. The realities are it usually comes off of having the right information in the first instance. So you need really, really good staff. You need really, really good timing, knowing the right time when to do something. You need really good tone. I always say this to the people. So many people who walk into difficulty do it because they have poor tone and poor timing. I think, importantly, honesty. Even if someone doesn't like it, you have to be able to deliver an honest assessment of something, but usually back it up with something factual, evidence-based. And in the case of players, that might be analysis, that might be stats. Those, for me, are the key components, but I don't think there is just one single ingredient.
I mean, one of the details you've dug into, which I'm fascinated by, is tailoring players' fitness and nutritional programmes, tying them to their menstrual cycles, being extra careful about ACL tears, which women are three times more prone to than gents. And I'm fascinated by this because when the women's game was just starting to gain momentum, there was a big push to show that there was no difference between men's and women's football, that if you give them the same training, same facilities, it all amounts to the same game. But it seems like over the past couple of years, there's been more of an acknowledgement and catering to the ways that female footballers and women's football is different than men's. How do you balance those two impulses?
Well, I think your starting point has to be remembering that women are not small men. That is so absolutely critical. So let's take any injury, like the biggest one, an ACL. Rehabbing an ACL injury for men and women, they might have a lot of similarities, but we don't develop as much muscle as men because we don't produce as much testosterone. Just take that as something simple. You then add on to the fact that we have a menstrual cycle, and within that menstrual cycle, for some, might not be disturbing of anything they're doing throughout the month, and for others, it could be damaging at different points. So we got hormonal, physiological differences. Then take the brain. Our brains are wired completely different.
Thank God.
Hallelujah. That's what makes the world what it is. We want it to be like that. But if our starting point is to treat women in exactly the same way, then our outcome will be completely different. And I think that's what's gone wrong for a long time, and something that we've had to re-educate internally, that starting point is different. And from there, develop our own research, our own methodologies around that.
There's another manifestation of this after last season, which was a total domestic banger. You only went and won every English trophy on offer and also made it to the Champions League final. First English club to reach that stage since Arsenal in 2007. You established yourself at the elite of the women's game, reinforced that status by wowing the British viewing audience with your incisive analysis as a pundit during Euro 2020 last summer. And there's a consistent conversation that now surrounds you about whether you could become the first woman to manage a Premier League side. You're constantly linked to the Chelsea and the Spurs jobs by paper talk in particular. Can you ever see yourself managing in the Premier League?
What I know is that I've been on a journey for such a long time that when you stumble across a dream job I think it's really difficult to think about anything else. Chelsea for me is my heart, my home. I'm in London, I'm a Londoner. This has been all I've ever thought about. And the reason I say that is not to avoid your question, is that what I have learned about my brain is that the minute you start to think about being somewhere else is the minute you're dead in this business. So I don't preoccupy my mind with thinking about anything else than being a champion here.
How long will it take then before you believe we'll see a women's coach in the Premier League?
I think the good news is that more clubs are hiring women to coach within their academies and be part of their staff. I think that the knock-on effect for that will be women, I think, that are already in those existing situations might be promoted and progress from within clubs. I could see that happening within the next 5 years of females being promoted onto coaching staff.
Paramount Plus is your choice for championship soccer.
A messy 24!
Streaming the best teams and biggest stars in America and around the world.
Giant stars, huge action.
From UEFA Champions League and Serie A.
Weston McKennie!
NWSL and the CONCACAF World Cup qualifiers.
A milestone moment for the United States!
Plus the best action from South America and Asia.
Oh my, what a goal!
So how do you choose from so many champions? You don't have to. This is the best of CBS Sports. Streaming on Paramount Plus.
It's Rog here to tell you about a product that I simply adore. It's been a long time staple in the Bennett refrigerator. Stoke Cold Brew Coffee. Always bold, always smooth. Yes, that is the very same Stoke as in the mighty Wrexham Fortress, known as the Stoke Kairas or the Stoke Racecourse, Wrexham AFC's home. They support it. They support football, which is just one great reason to love this coffee. It is my go-to enjoy during the football calendar, essentially the opposite of Everton. And you can check out their full lineup of 48 ounce cold brew products, something for everybody, from light to dark roast to seasonal favorites in a refrigerated multi-serve format. I tell you this as someone whose blood type is now officially Stoke Espresso Blend. Have the coffee house experience in the comfort of your own home and do it now. Stoke Cold Brew Coffee, and be sure to follow Wrexham AFC. Big love to all at Stoke. Courage. Emma, you've said that you don't feel the pressure of goals as manager, that your life goals indeed have nothing to do with football. So I'm not going to ask about your ambitions with Chelsea, but I would love to hear how you see the future of women's football in England and globally over the next 5-10 years. What do you hope to see?
First of all, pressure is when people have to find money to pay for their mortgage, or finding food to feed their families, or fighting to stave off any health concerns. For me, that's pressure. This is privilege. Secondly, when it comes to the women's game, it's going to keep progressing. It's going to have a huge Euros tournament this summer, which I think is going to elevate the game to another space. And broadcasting will be in demand with more and more platforms, maybe alternative platforms, looking to secure, you know, more opportunities to sell the women's game. And I think with prize money, another big World Cup, I think women's football is on the cusp of exploding and finally catching up from 50 years of neglect that will put us in our rightful place as a well-established professional sport.
God bless. Quick one. NWSL versus Women's Super League. How do you see that balance of power shifting?
We all make each other better. So the envy of what we do in this country will only in turn force the investment in NWSL to make that better. Better standards for players, better amounts that people can earn within that, plus improving the coaching, plus the facilities, plus the length of the league. NWSL versus WSL versus the Bundesliga versus the French Feminina division. All of it makes a better women's game. We're in it together.
I hope everything you have just said comes true. And I know it's a team game and I know it's a collective vision, but I need to acknowledge you just received the FIFA award for best coach, an individual award. And first of all, I loved your open mouth reaction. And you did make it clear, football is a team game, but there was a side to you that was deeply emotional. And you said something beautiful, Emma. You said the first thing I thought about was that little kid in the orange flats kicking the ball against the wall, commentating on myself in a cup final, leading a team. As a little girl, I dreamed of these things. I've just had a dream turn into a reality.
Yeah.
Take us into your head in that moment.
Oh, take you into my head while I was sitting there wearing my mum's slippers and pyjamas underneath a nice top. This was a moment where I thought I was joining a call to eventually watch somebody else pick the trophy up. I left the call, sat in a kitchen, speechless, thinking, who do I phone first? And what is it I'm going to say? Because it felt to me, and honestly, I say this, only a woman will say what I'm going to say. It felt like we'd played a cup final and we hadn't played very well, and I felt guilty about getting it. And then I stopped and I thought, in years to come they're not going to care whether you played very well, you won it, so I'm going to think about all the cups of tea I'm going to ask people to make me at work this week, because I have just been voted the best coach in the world. Oh my goodness, I've just won an Oscar.
It's the small things, the cups of tea. But Emma, you had a dream that thousands of English people have. The Wembley, the trophies, the glory. You are one of the few who've made that dream come true. Oh. In that moment, tell me, I'm a dreamer, shattered dreams only. What does it feel like to recognise that you've done it? That impossible journey.
You know what? It's still sinking in. If I told you otherwise, I'd be lying, because so many people call and text and, you know, oh my goodness, you know, you've dreamed about this, or you've been so amazing. And it's only when I stop a little bit and reflect and think, I can't believe it. I feel embarrassed about it, even though it's something I've worked so hard to achieve. But I am proud of myself. Like, I know how hard I've worked, but I also know that all the beautiful people around me are the reason why I'm in the position I'm in.
Emma Hayes, to more Oscars, to more awards, to more cups of teas, to more wearing your mother's slippers. It's a glamorous life, football. And
definitely,
you are an inspiration, a pathfinder, a human wonder to you, your team, your joy, and your continued success.
Thank you very much.
That is one of my favourite interviews we've done all season. The world would be a beautiful place if it were filled with more Emma Hayes's. One note, for those who want to revel in even more Chelsea women's magic, dig out our Sam Kerr interview. Sam Kerr, now a global sensation, but we interviewed her in Chicago back in 2019, and I still revel in the story she told us that day. Here's a taste. I love watching you play because you can get your name on the score sheet in so many different ways. One-on-ones, from range, with thunder, with subtlety, from the air. You can really do it all. You're like Ronaldo in his prime.
My national team coach tells me that if you can score in the air, it adds $1 million onto your contract. So maybe in the men's game, but I've been working on it. Goes back to my youth football, AFL.
Aussie rules mentality.
Yeah, you just have to do anything to get the ball, and you kind of have to be at the bottom of the pack. And sometimes it's easy and sometimes it's not. You just got to grind it out.
Oh, elephant coming through.
People ask me, what's your favourite goal? And I say, the one that I don't have to do anything, the tappy. And I'm like, just pass me the ball in the 6 yard. I'll just tap it in. I don't want to score goals from, you know, 30 yards out. I want to score a tap in. It's the easiest goal in the world.
Sam Kerr, God bless. I love that. Her favourite kind of goals are tap-ins. Peak Sam Kerr. For more on that entire conversation, which covers her journey and the lessons learned along the way, find it in our pod feed, October 14th, 2019, or on our social. We'll have just tweeted it out when this pod drops. Believe me, it's worth it. And talking about worth it, what a weekend we have ahead of us. Sydney Leroux and the Pride take on Kansas City, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time, Saturday night. Paramount Plus. Other games to savour, we've only got the Cascadia Derby, Sophia Smith's Portland Thorns taking on Zierra King, and they will reign for their first clash of the regular season, 10:30 p.m. Eastern Time on CBS Sports Network, and Sunday, 5 p.m. Eastern Time, Paramount Plus. Alex Morgan, we'll see if she can repeat her hat-trick plus one against US Women's National Team goalkeeper Lissa Nair as San Diego swaggers up to the mighty Chicago Red Stars. So much football to come. We will be back next week to revel in it with two truly tenacious guests, the US Women National Team's Andy Sullivan, your captain of the Washington Spirit, and the truly singular Nadia Nadim, God, I love her, of Louisville and Denmark. Send in your insights, your questions. We will discuss them all. Join us then next Thursday. Until then, courage. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Men in Blazers ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know, after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used. Because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.